Welcome to My Opinion Movies. Next week, I guess spoilers, we will be doing Sherlock, the RDJ movie with Jude Law. But I wanted to show you the Sherlock Holmes I grew up with, Basil from Baker Street, the Disney Great Mouse Detective movie, which is very dark, is still kind of a musical, and is, well, you know, classic strange Disney nonsense, which I'm excited to talk about. So enjoy this episode from our back catalog, from the old archives, and enjoy. Thanks, guys.
So, Abby, I noticed you're wearing a festive crown.
I am. It's my birthday podcast. Madison was kind enough to provide a sash as well. That'll come out later. After more dragon's milk.
She also set the trend of saying, for my birthday party, I want a podcast. And so we have a thing now where apparently I do birthdays. I'm waiting for my first bar mitzvah. But we're here. So for your birthday wish, what can I provide for you? What movie are we here to see?
Not Baby Geniuses, because that got a 2% on Rotten Tomatoes. And people requested that I not do that. Enough people that I decided to go with The Great Mouse Detective.
Excellent. So in an era where we were just announced that Ian McKellen was coming out with his own version of Sherlock Holmes this summer. And I believe Robert Downey Jr., after working on the new Captain America movie, is slated to do his third Sherlock Holmes movie. And season 4 of Sherlock might come out in the next decade. It's worth mentioning that we're saturated with Sherlock, but Disney brought us in 1988, I believe, The Great Mouse Detective. What can you tell me about The Great Mouse Detective?
Well, I believe my dad showed me this movie because at this point I was reading Sherlock Holmes. Mm. And, you know, I just turned 23, so it was long after it came out. I remember the animatronic queen and Radigan, mostly Radigan. And the voice of the dad is the same voice that did Scrooge McDuck, which is not worth mentioning, but I guess I have to.
So it was worth mentioning. You literally mentioned it.
But Scrooge McDuck, that movie was so bad. I refuse to be on the podcast.
Animation has not held up well on this podcast.
I think this one will. I'm really hopeful. It's a good movie.
It's an interesting movie. And I remember this because this is generally considered like Disney's bad era. But this, I remember being fun. In fact, we're not going to watch my own copy because the VCR essentially melted down when we tried to watch Space Jam. But I do have my own VHS copy in the basement, and it's a Disney movie, so it doesn't fit on any VHS shelves because it's slightly bigger. But it was a fun movie. This is one of those ones. This and the Robin Hood with the Foxes from 1973 mm-hmm. were the Disney movies I watched until the tape wore out. So is this our traditional Benedict Cumberbatch style Sherlock Holmes?
I don't think so. Watson's pretty cuddly. I mean, he's fluffy and he's cuddly. He's very nice to the child that is like, my dad is gone.
Wait, there's a missing parent in a Disney movie somehow?
No, there are two missing parents because the mother is like never mentioned, if I remember correctly.
That's
she
right.
She doesn't exist.
And her father is kidnapped.
Yep. Who makes toys. I want her like little dancing birthday present to this day.
The only thing I thought of as a side note, I love this movie again, I mentioned. I don't know how anyone bought that mouse robot as the queen. It's the worst.
Where it's like sparks are flying off and her teeth are coming apart.
And she rattles around when she walks.
Like, because Radigan is so suave, they just couldn't take their eyes off of him.
Also, this is a plot point, if I remember correctly. He's a literal freaking rat and everyone's terrified of him. Yeah. And in fact, he kills someone because he says he's a rat and not a mouse. But he's clearly 8 times larger than any of the other characters in here except for Toby the dog.
Toby the dog and the giant cat.
The giant evil cat. Also, I love what this movie presupposes, which is that there's a monarchy
and a mouse monarchy, and they're the same monarch at the same time, because it's a mouse Victoria and a queen Victoria at the same time, which is amazing.
That's a good movie.
I think we're already done. It's flawless. Is there any last thoughts before we go watch this?
I'm really excited. I hope the CD underbelly lives up to my CD underbelly memories.
This is a movie that starts introducing the female lead, other than the little girl, with a scene in like a, what? It's like a dance hall, right? And she's stripping?
I'd forgotten about that. Doesn't she show up to Sherlock's house first to introduce the, or is that a different female?
I mean, female mice.
There's so many shady female mice.
There is. But there is a scene in like a burlesque show, I think, yeah, where the woman's kick dancing and stripping because it's a Disney movie. It's mice. It's not people.
And you that's know. What makes it a shady underbelly.
It does.
Pirates. Pirate rats.
They're pirate rats. He ends up in a pirate bar.
Yeah.
And
they have to pretend. And Watson's bad at pretending because he's cuddly.
He is. And so from little girl reading a movie or reading books about a coked up Sherlock Holmes to watching a movie on your birthday about an adult mouse Sherlock Holmes, shall we go watch Grey Mouse Detective?
Woo!
Yeah.
Dearest friends, dear gentlemen, listen to my song. Life down here's been hard for you. Life has made you strong. Let me lift the mood with my attitude. Hey, fellas, the time is right. Get ready. Tonight's the night. Boys, what you're hoping for will come true. Let me be good to you.
Welcome to my Opie Defend Your Childhood. Tonight we watch The Great Mouse Detective, the prequel to Benedict Cumberbatch's Song of the South. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter. Tonight we were defended by
Abby.
And on panel tonight is
Thomas.
Hello, this is Daniel.
Madison.
Jeremy.
Kaylin.
Matt.
Matthew W. Quinn.
And that means every time I refer to him, I'll call him Matthew W. Quinn. So, W. Actually, no, that's not true. Everyone's here tonight, so I can say hi to everyone, and you can update your Facebook wall to regard the fact that we have a full roster. And we'll beat the Braves, because looking at how they're doing, they're not worth mentioning. Which is really placing this episode at a single moment in a single year in a
terrible season.
Why did
you just mention them if they are not worth mentioning?
Because he's wearing the shirt.
Oh, okay.
Oh, shit! I'm literally wearing the Scarlet Letter, and it's not coming off.
Oh, no.
I might be undressed by the end of this song. But before we get any further into this, as it's her birthday and she's a princess wearing a crown, and the queen is nearly killed during this episode, as heir to the throne, did this movie hold up?
It totally did. And it wasn't as racist as Scrooge McDuck, Treasure of the Lost Lamp, or whatever happened with that.
So you mean the fact that a rat wants to pretend that they're a mouse and they're kicked out of society and ostracized for being a rat didn't bother you? And that they're all the same colored mouse and they're kicking out rats?
We don't care about the dirty rats over here. No.
They're all rodents. I only like dwarf hamsters. I had them. They were named Sherlock and Watson.
They were different colored mice, by the way, because the stripper mouse was like stark white and the rest of them were kind of brownish.
She put on like white face or was she white?
Pardon?
All of her was
because
white.
Because the first time we see Basil of Baker Street, he's dressed up like an Asian mouse.
Yeah.
And he comes out all crazy
with
the
Fu Manchu.
With a Fu Manchu on.
And he deflates the costume.
Yeah, that whole joke got deflated midway through. But did it hold up for you?
Yeah, two things. The Basil, a.k.a. Sherlock, was just enough of an asshole for me. And I forgot how many times they allude to the fact that real Sherlock, human Sherlock, exists. There were a lot of allusions to, oh, the humans are there, just beyond the curtain.
And that the Germans are boring, if I recall correctly.
And that pirates are awesome.
Well, that was never in doubt.
And that
and the queen is easily impersonated by a robot.
And that people at CD dive bars just prefer not to move at all.
Except for maybe smoke from their cigarettes. Okay. It's only proof they're alive.
And that pirates go upriver.
Hey now.
Oh, well, maybe all rivers are saltwater.
Well, maybe if it was close to the sea, that might actually work.
That's not how rivers work, though. They don't flow upstream.
They get brackish, though.
It'll still be brackish. The Nile does.
Yeah, it'll be a little brackish. How far. Yeah,
just a bit brackish. In London.
Yeah, up a little bit. I mean, if you go really far up the river, it won't be brackish. But
well, if there's a space gush around, there's no brackish. No, no one.
That was terrible.
Fuck all of you.
Oh, I hit it. That's actually pretty clever.
You have been graded.
All right. Before we get any further, Daniel, would you like to try to explain this plot? Because I'm out of jokes, apparently.
It's actually a very simple plot, so I won't have to take too long. It's pretty much a Sherlock Holmes story, except with a mouse. In this case,
whoa.
I know. It's you got to kind of think about it for a minute.
Disney made a movie about a mouse?
Believe it or not, yes.
Oh, boy. Don't forget to explain the opening scene in great detail.
It lasted so much shorter than I remember. It was like 30 seconds, and then
that's
the
what she said.
Gone.
Oh! So somebody
and
wanted
then
me.
Dad was gone. Was that how you ended that? That's what
yeah.
she said, Jim.
30 seconds, and then Dad was gone.
So that, as Abby said, a toy maker gets kidnapped, and his little daughter goes looking for him and hires the great Basil of Baker Street to find him, but he's been kidnapped by Professor Radigan to build a robot facsimile of Mouse Queen Victoria.
Now, Daniel, would you say Professor Radigan was a mouse?
No, he was a big, ugly sewer rat, and I don't care how much he was pretending. Come on, embrace your roots, man. Embrace your roots.
He sold out to the man.
Yes, that is exactly what he did.
He went around in mouse face.
And Thomas wins. Brilliant.
I don't know if you can tell this, listeners, but we are the whitest people you know. And this is getting really uncomfortable.
Wait, you mean a bunch of people that watch movies from our childhood are the whitest people we know? That's not...
Well, technically that name has already been trademarked and taken, so mm-hmm. we just call this ourselves Myopia Defend Your Childhood. Subscribe on iTunes.
Also,
my website is dudeletter.com, which is
I thought the plugin
the
came at the end of the podcast there.
We already talked about From Abby plugging and your father leaving after 30 seconds. We can't do this anymore. This is a Disney movie, damn it. There are children's.
Yeah, a Disney movie that provides very good reason why Don Bluth left Disney, because they're being too cheap. Because some of the anime.
This is so much better than the movie we watched.
This is so much better than any Don Bluth movie we've seen so far.
Titan A.E. is what we watched last.
Before we get too far, I would like to point out that the two movies that I've defended have had very few plot holes compared to the Matthew W. Quinn defended movies.
At least my animated movie creatures have nostrils. Toby the dog did not.
Well played, Bazinga.
Well played.
Don't you really? Insult Toby.
I'll insult Toby if I want to.
He found the bat.
Girls, you're both pretty.
You can be a princess one day too, Matt.
Would you like my sash?
No, by the way, since she looks like such a princess, it should also be noted that the new princess to the throne was born today. Princess of Cambridge.
We fought a war, so we didn't have to care about the royal baby.
I heard the queen got so excited at the birth, her heart started beating a full 5 beats per minute.
What a dutch.
By the time this podcast comes out, that baby's going to be like a year old.
That baby will... I'm not even going to make a death joke.
We're going to have to do a lot of editing on this.
So, as I was saying, the animation in this movie looked kind of cheap.
Only in the one scene did it really fall apart. The clock tower scene at the end was amazing.
Oh, that was good. I'll give him that. That must be where all the money went, was making that clock tower scene.
But the thing is, like, I don't mind real animation because it looks real. Like, occasionally...
Well, you know that's what you're getting.
Yeah.
You know it's that.
So, occasionally there were, ink coloration that was not even, but I think it looked overall very good. It looked very real world, and I think the worst part about movies we've seen in the past are when they switch between real and fake.
Titan A.
There you go.
Spawn and not Spawn.
You can have a high quality cell animation like Seeker of the Nim or Land Before Time or American Tail. That was visually
that's what we're
well
saying.
Done.
This is all hand drawn animation.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, but this is kind of cheap looking hand drawn animation, especially the beginning.
In what way?
Yeah. Like, well, there's Toby in his nostrils, and the beginning.
Okay,
well,
okay.
It looks kind of faded out in the beginning when they have the fog.
That could be an issue.
There were no nostrils in Type
well,
A.
Well, you know what?
Only
there was a cleft loop. Asshole, but that's something else.
And all those right angles for Kangaroo Lady.
For a movie that's as old as I am, the animation is very good.
Yeah, yeah, considering that this movie's 12 years older than Titan A.E., mm-hmm. this looks pretty damn good. And it had a much smaller budget.
I haven't brought up Titan A.E. I was comparing it to some of the films from that time.
Such as?
American Tail.
American Tail is actually much more recent than this.
I thought this came out both in the late 80s.
91.
I think this came out in 85, didn't it?
I thought American Tail came out in
86. Okay.
This came out in 86. American Tail came out in 91.
I thought it was like 89.
No. This came out much more recently. Additionally, this came out 4 years before Little Mermaid.
No, is correct. American Tail came out the same year as The Great Mouse Detective. 86 and 86.
But this didn't have Dom DeLuise in it.
Well, I mean,
American Tail lost a lot of money.
You're complaining about the fog at the beginning, though, but I thought that was a nice artistic choice because it created the atmosphere that's still
needed. I
didn't
mind the fog itself. That was fine. Just some of the buildings didn't look that good.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I'm kind of with Nick on that. I mean, it's all about setting
excellent.
The atmosphere during that first few moments.
American
after
Tail
that,
got reamed. Like, really? It got less than 50... I gotta look up these Rotten Tomatoes scores, because this is garbage. Anyway, so we have to actually talk about this movie.
This is the part of the podcast where you can take a bathroom break.
And the mouth and the background characters don't move around. I mean, at least they have shadow. At least in the scene they go to the toy store, mm-hmm. Dawson, Basil, and Olivia have shadows. That's good.
Mm-hmm. That those are shadows. We should actually talk about this movie other than how people are wrong.
Well, the biggest highlight was Vincent Price.
Of course.
So who's Vincent Price and why does he matter?
Take it away.
He was a horror actor from the 50s and 60s who was sort of the heir to Bela Lugosi after Lugosi died.
And he talks kind of like, well, if you don't know who Vincent Price is, that's what YouTube
have
is
you,
for.
Have you listened to Thriller? Because he's the guy that does the bridge in Thriller.
But that's more of a horror than a thriller, isn't it?
What we should really be talking about is how, after almost 20 years, I still want that stupid ballerina tulip doll.
There's an example of good animation, because you're right. That was done very well.
Yeah.
In the way that it moved.
It was very fluid.
And exactly.
And the queen robot was hilarious.
Queen Victoria had Parkinson's.
Or palsy. Not sure which.
Well, and I think overall, we should talk about, because the most important part of this movie is, do you believe this character as a Sherlock Holmes riff? Because if it's supposed to be Sherlock Holmes, it needs to have certain characteristics in my mind. Like, he's supposed to be very quick, very observational. We're living in an era which is so oversaturated with Sherlock Holmes that it's almost frustrating. Because I like the character. It's a brilliant character. I wrote a history paper on him when I was earning my master's. Because he is fascinating, and the actual character, based on actual professors, changed the legal system in Britain, and the idea that we can introduce evidence and that can change things, and the idea that you can call in an expert and say that, you know, as a doctor, this person could not have committed this crime because of X, was really introduced by Arthur Conan Doyle, and it matters. And right now, a lot of the stuff is being produced as crap. It honestly is.
I think it was an effective riff on Holmes.
It had all the stereotypes.
Right.
Well, minus the cocaine.
It was somewhat watered down, I guess, but it is, I mean, it's a children's
Well, they captured the essences that everybody forgets. I mean, this Basil, like Holmes, is very antisocial and very...
The overly arrogant scientific
rants.
Yeah,
exactly.
He has all the nice bubbly science flasks.
And he interrupts people a lot.
But he's not quite antisocial, because at the end, when Dawson, the equivalent of Watson, is supposed to be leaving, he's actually quite fearful that he will be alone again.
But he's always like that with Watson. He forgets the young girl's last name, and he spent the entire movie with her.
Which, if I may, seemed like a bad joke out of Garfield and Friends, where they always get Arbuckle wrong.
Wasn't that the joke in Pete's Dragon where they couldn't pronounce the town's name?
But I mean,
I thought the end was kind of cutesy. I thought that's the only point where it really felt like a Disney movie. Mm. At the end where Sherlock was sad and tried to convince him to stay, and then they, you know, bro hugged it out.
So the stripper mouse wasn't
the
Disney?
The beautiful mouse wasn't the catalyst.
With the mole? With the
duplicitous woman, which I, again, thought would last more than 30 seconds.
But I mean, it does remind you, well, you and duplicitous women.
I love them.
It just makes you realize the biggest, this is, again, a Dark Ages movie for Disney where, you know, I mean, this probably came out within eyesight of Oliver and Company and other forgettable movies, but I enjoyed because it was that right age for me. The biggest problem for me is that it followed, well, I mean, to quote some people who've been on this podcast before, it's heavy with the TV tropes. You know, it's the things that you expect. You know what we need? A plot device, a musical number, a cliche, and this movie was like...
I agree.
We need a romantic scene. We need a soft scene. We need a touching scene.
You know, I agree that the musical numbers were kind of unnecessary. They serve no purpose in this movie at all. But I think what's most important about it is that Disney was actually trying to break its mold somewhat. And they never do that. It was actually a really dark movie.
There was stripping.
There was stripping.
There was burlesque. It was something I remembered very well. It's why I have a thing for mice.
Radigan. Oh, Radigan.
Oh.
The villain has two musical numbers.
He does. In fact, he sings
one of them makes sense, though. His first one doesn't make any sense in context of the plot, but that vinyl recording
Although,
works.
If I may, this is where Schwarzenegger gets that scene where he has the henchmen sing to him in Batman and Robin.
Yeah, but it's cooler when Vincent Price does it.
Alluding back to Live and Let Die, there was the lovely Bond, I'm going to tie you to a mousetrap scene.
There was. Mm-hmm. Which is the scene I remember the best because it... someone corrected me. I said during the watching of this that it was... if the game Mousetrap was based on it, it wasn't. It came out 20 years before, I think. However, this was... this was maybe Disney's stab at Looney Tunes in the 80s because not only does an axe fall, but also an anvil and a mousetrap, and it's being played off in a song that must have lasted 20 minutes because at one point there's a thump and it skips half the record and it's still an 8-minute scene or whatever.
It's the Rube Goldberg of Bond traps.
Except that the first vinyl record didn't come out until 1948, and before that there were play records.
How dare you.
And then before that you had, what did Edison make? The cylinders?
The wax cylinders.
The wax cylinders. So, there's that.
Yeah, but you don't, Mice May have had that, you didn't know. I mean,
but except it was a human-sized device, so.
Well, no, this movie did have something wonderful for when Lydia shows up and is trying to tell her sob story. Olivia pulls out and is telling her sob story, and Basil pulls out a violin and starts playing it. And considering the size of a mouse, this is the world's smallest violin.
I do also like that you're conjecturing here that while many Whovians are moistening themselves over a crossover between Benedict Cumberbatch and the current generation of Doctor Who, which has been announced this year. This is 2015 for those of you who are listening to this several years in the future and are very confused. That in this world, there's also a mouse version of Doctor who has gone to the future and gotten a turntable and a vinyl record to play, just to play off Basil of Baker Street to kill him. Because that's an amazing scene that we're missing. That's the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead of this movie.
So Radigan is the master?
And he goes to the future to get a record player just to kill Basil of Baker Street. That's an amazing scene. And they're just jibber-jabbering where that chameleon guy who doesn't get a name is talking to a fat mouse about how they're going, oh, crikey, we're going to the future to get a turntable.
And cut.
And scene, we're done.
So Abby mentioned Rube Goldberg. I don't know if you guys noticed at the very beginning and how that little contraption, when she first walked, the little girl walked in the door, and there's a contraption boiling water that ended up smoking a pipe.
From Back to the Future, right? where they fed all the dogs with the little thing. And
from Pee-wee's Big Adventure with the Breakfast Machine.
From Wallace and Gromit.
Tobacco.
Thanks.
Why did you just say tobacco?
Because there were like 8 versions of tobacco attached to this machine. There was the bubble pipe, and then like 8 cigarettes, and then like a cigarillo, and maybe some.
We call one of those a jazz mild. Cigarette.
Something was dipping off screen.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what the purpose of that machine was. So it give his office a smoky flavor.
It's the most. I mean, if I may whip my nerd Sherlock on the table. It's the most Sherlocky thing that happens here, because Sherlock talks about how he has published a treatise on like the 36 kinds of tobacco ash, and someone is right now yelling at their podcast and throwing it out the window. And
it was 32.
Exactly. But
other than the maid going, "My good pillows," and all of the feathers going into the air.
Oh man.
Why was she holding a mace? Where did that come from?
Sherlock.
Yeah, it was Sherlock. Yeah.
Always has to test out.
As a Christmas gift, he got her some mace.
A mace. It was
a mace.
The medieval weapon.
Well, that's what women had used to defend themselves back then. They had invented pepper spray.
My second joke was going to be about her bad pillows.
Oh, no.
Her dirty pillows. Oh. I feel like smacking you right now, sir.
I am so many directions.
Could you do that?
We like this movie so much.
It was good.
It was very good. But there's a scene in a bar with a burlesque show.
Where they're dressed up as pirates. I remembered that one. It was great. He had the peg leg.
And there was wallpaper with other pirates painted on it.
And Dawson gets roofied and dances on the stage with the strippers.
And then he recovers after about 2 minutes.
As I learned from Nick Nolte's blog, that's not what roofies do.
He was just as cuddly as I remembered. Dawson.
He was a walrus without tusks.
As fat as Dawson was, maybe they underdosed him.
Yeah,
but according to the movie, if you ever get poisoned without knowing, if you fall on a piano and then get slapped twice, you'll be fine.
It's a tried and true remedy.
Mm-hmm.
No ill effects or hangovers or anything like that either. You're just back in action.
Just mustached bafflement.
What? What in heaven's name is going on here?
Basil, you've been intoxicated. My word.
Where are my pants, good sir?
And there's a scene, like, and when they're in it, you see, like, Holmes looking longingly into the glass, you know, licking his finger, like, my word, I believe this has been drugged.
And he already knew it was drugged. He saw them drugging it.
Like, because as a good bartender, the bartender had in his chest pocket a vial of poison. Uh-huh. Just in case.
All right, something I did like was how they played off the how a cat would appear to mice. When you introduce Radigan's cat that he feeds his minions to.
Felicia, I believe her name was.
Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah.
So, as a side, I like that reference because it's a girl cat. So it can't be Felix the cat. It's Felicia.
It is Felicia.
Bye, Felicia.
Control save. Nailed it.
Well, that was part of the aspect that was really dark about it, because you got, like, her eating that mouse. It was in shadow, but still, that was pretty prominently dark for what Disney was doing and still usually does.
I don't even know what feminism means.
I hope I didn't remove all of those from that episode.
You didn't. You couldn't have. Did it technically...
We love you, Kelly.
Did it technically pass the Bechdel test? Because the maid talked to Olivia Flaversham about being cold.
Wasn't it Flaggerhammer?
But did they actually have a conversation? Because she just talked her.
That was my question.
But so I don't know if that necessarily passes, because beyond that, they talked about Basil.
Okay, before we get too far.
I started with Dragonspoke. It was my question.
I think she tells Olivia she's safe.
Did you just give him the mic because he was a man?
I don't even know what feminism means.
After Basil and Dawson chase off the bat minion, I think the maid tells Olivia she's safe. because the bat has been chased away. So since they don't refer to Basil and Dawson directly, they are not talking about a man.
Before we get too far, someone needs to explain this test you're talking about.
So there's a Bechdel test, and you have to have, at least three women in the movie, and at least two of them have to talk to each other about something other than a man. So that Avengers test, fails?
That test has always confused me, because is it like not talking about other characters, or is it not talking about sexual attraction to a man?
It can't just be about the weather.
It just could be a conversation. It just has to be a conversation.
As long as it's not...
It's the reason why Sex and the City fails the Bechdel test, because even though it's all female, all they do is talk about shoes and not what's actually happening.
Okay, so it can't just be not about how hot Hawkeye is. It has to be about something that is related to the aliens invading.
Frankly, it's why Frozen fails the Bechdel test, because...
No!
Frozen fails a lot of things.
Let it go.
You guys couldn't see this because it's an audio podcast unless you're watching us, which is creepy. Hi, NSA. But when she said no, she literally shook the mic. And it really lets you know she was upset about Frozen, as though part of her heart thought, because it should have been Frozen.
I just wanted it to be a Disney movie that made sense or something.
The Bechdel test?
No, Frozen.
That'd make a really good movie.
That would be a very interesting test.
The musical. I realize as a guy singing it, it doesn't have the same impact.
It'd actually be an all-male cast. So.
This movie pretty much producer. Did, except for Olivia. Yeah.
We love you, Kelly.
Kelly is away on, quote, birthday leave.
We're birthday buddies. I'm covering the fort.
Birthday buddy.
That's the second time we've heard Muppet Babies parody this evening.
We haven't talked about the movie in almost 20 minutes.
I've got something that I'd like to bring up about the movie.
Bullshit.
And that was... I do. I actually do. And that was my biggest problem with it, since apparently that's what we have to do here. And that was the bat. The bat was worth a couple of good creepy shots, but whoever voiced him was just damn annoying.
So, I guess what I will add is, since this is the second movie in the Myopia podcast series where we've had a bat in it and I've been on panel. And so I'm going to state movies with bats in them as from an end of two are just bad to begin with.
That's why I didn't like the first... Wait, what about Batman?
No. Bats. Actual bats.
Bats appear
in Batman.
Are you saying
Batman is not an actual
as a character.
Bat?
A bat as a character.
Wait, I've got this.
Oh, please.
I'm thinking.
I got
my
it.
Brain is...
I'll keep logicking this one out.
Darkwing Schmuck? Wait, what do you got?
I believe he's referring to Batty from Ferngully.
No, I know what he's referring to. We're trying to find a good bat character.
The name is Batty.
No!
Matt, I'm not above killing you.
Potato in a jacket.
Oh, fine.
I would have just
go into the corner of shame, young man. Go into the corner of shame.
Don't make me start that again, Daniel.
So we had Robin Williams as a bat, and now we had the reject from Eureka's Castle in this movie.
Oh my god, Eureka's
Well, the problem
Castle.
With Wait, that whoa. Is...
Robin Williams was the bat in Ferngully?
Yes.
Oh, this makes it even worse.
I don't know. I mean,
what, Ferngully or this?
I haven't listened to the Ferngully podcast, but I hear
no.
that thing.
Oh, yeah.
About
no.
Ferngully or the podcast?
Ferngully.
Because I've heard both.
Clearly, I love the podcast.
Well, you would be one of the few.
So, yeah, as Daniel said earlier, yeah, the bat is scary at times, but his voice is so unthreatening and just not good.
Hey, yeah, sweetheart. It's like, dear Lord, man, lay off the drink.
He's
his flowery hat when he's threatening the queen.
Oh, yeah.
So we had the closed captions on, and it was better because they actually, you could see the words that he was saying. You couldn't hear his words through the grumbling, but he had some pretty good quibs there at the end when he was trying to throw the queen to the cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kept
mostly he was
fat.
Just mocking her weight.
He did. It was really mean. Like,
they're fatty.
I also didn't need to hear him sing the stripper song as he did through the tunnels.
My biggest problem with him was that he had a peg leg, but he refused to fly.
He couldn't fly. His wing was crippled.
Did he have a crippled wing?
He was flying out of the cat's mouth.
Yeah, there was a point where he
was hovering. He managed to maintain
his
altitude, but not go any further.
He might be able to fly a little bit, but not have sustained flight, because when you see him thrown off the blimp, he... is able to slow him his
oh yeah by the way spoilers everybody a Disney villain dies by falling sorry
Oh, and speaking,
I said villain.
Well, everyone is a hero of their own story. So in Scar's story, Mufasa is the villain.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of wondering, hey, the death of Ratigan. Spoilers. Basil rings the bell that causes the clock tower to move.
No, it doesn't. It's just coincidence.
Midnight.
Oh, okay. It didn't cause that.
It was just
coincidental.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Because the cat was going to leap to the top of Big Ben and just go for it.
Yeah, you fix those notes. I want to quote the song because this is kind of a highlight of Ratigan. I had to pull up the lyrics.
Oh, yeah.
An even grimier plot has been simmering in my great criminal brain. And then the chorus kicks in. Even meaner, you mean it. Worse than the widows and orphans, you drown.
Yep.
Well, I have seen this movie a dozen times. And as Kaylin brought up, the benefit of subtitles is that you realize that people singing at Vincent Price, a man who looks like he's dipped in grease every morning,
aww,
being told that he drowned a bunch of widows and orphans, and it reminded them of a song so well that they can sing in unison. And so every morning he's like, you know, I should drown some orphans and widows. And you're just like, oh, thanks, Ratigan.
I vividly remembered him, like, squishing that drunk mouse until his eyes popped. So I'm glad that he just fed him to the cat after singing about drowning.
Well, he did it with a toy.
The toy and squeezing it, but I couldn't remember what he was squeezing. So that's what I assume you were thinking of.
Yeah, I just meshed them together.
It is creepy. And the rat thing's showing up occasionally and like bugging eye out and that's creepy too.
And then he totally loses it at the end, goes full blown animal mode, and then just sort of ripping Basil a new one.
Please, please, it's beast mode.
Yeah. I always was confused as a kid what was going on there, if like hulked out or something, but
I think he basically just pretty much said, you know, screw this, the whole civilized veneer, I'm gonna be a rat.
Yes.
Are you?
So is he like a Rudyard?
Racial cues again?
Yeah, is he like trying to be a Rudyard Kipling villain where he's trying to pretend like he's a culture but is really just a beast underneath?
He just wants man's great fire to make his dreams come true. Thank you. Whoopie-doo.
Thank you, Louis Prima.
There we go. Yeah, I want to be like you. Who?
So it's the mouse man's burden? Is that what we're going
with? Oh!
King Louis is just obnoxious. Ratigan is evil.
Well, I mean, that makes sense, though, because that would be something that a Victorian writer would pay attention to at the time. That
it's a smartly written movie.
It's a lot smarter than I remember, yeah.
Well, it's pretty clear Ratigan really cares about his outward appearance since he came out with medals and, you know, this coat jacket
with the chevrons and everything.
Yeah.
As the consort of the queen.
Yes.
He's going to bang that robot chick. I just saw Ex Machina. I know what robots can do. And scene. So we're just about out of time here.
Sex robot.
There was a couple whitest kids you know. And it wasn't just because I was looking around the podcast table. There's a comedy group called the Whitest Kids You Know. Tag back, please. I need so much money. The mafia's gonna take my knees.
Microphones aren't cheap. Please help us.
No, these are very cheap microphones. Please help us.
Paul Newman's gonna have my legs broke.
So we're gonna be sued.
My Simpsons reference failed.
I was laughing on the inside. As a side note, the number of things I reference, I'm just surprised I haven't called myself the sauce boss. I've been watching a lot of Epic Mealtime. Sausage. But we are just about out of time, so we should go around the table and give our final thoughts. Abby, you're last, except for me, who's better. But we're going to start here with Thomas, and you should go around the table and give us some final thoughts.
I guess I'd say I enjoyed this movie. It was fun. From the time period, I think it worked. Especially if you, not just the time period it was produced, but the time period it was trying to, I guess, harken back to 1897, the Holmes era. I think it did a fairly good job of, you know, basically drawing on that. I mean, we have so much, Sherlock Holmes going around now. You got the ABC show, the BBC show, the Robert Downey Jr. movie, and now the Ian... movie. So, and I kind of liked how this went. I've read most of the Holmes stories, and it's fun. It's definitely a child version of it. It's toned to it, but I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Thanks, Thomas. Daniel.
I, it was a lot darker than I remember, and it was actually a lot more cleverly written than I remember, which impressed me because it demonstrates Disney is still able to break out of its mold. There were a few weaknesses to it, which is mostly when Disney was still trying to fit it into its mold, like with that Disney song of Disney villain song that didn't really add anything, and that dumb henchman comic relief that didn't add anything, but thank you. But yeah, overall, I was surprised. This was actually this actually still held up pretty well.
Thank you, Madison.
I'll agree with what Thomas and Daniel said. I have to say it held up really well. I think that the song and dance part of it was very Disney-esque and not necessarily like really part of this movie. They just did it because it's Disney, and what the hell, let's put a song in there. But I still found it entertaining. I think it held up to what I remembered it being, except it was way darker than I remembered, and I don't remember a mouse stripper or drowning orphans and widows, but you know what? Fuck it. Let's just go for it. It was good.
Yeah, fuck those drowning orphans and widows. Jeremy.
What I liked most about it was the jarring differences between, you know, light kids film and dark, dark stuff that was obviously for adults that kids wouldn't get. So in that regard, probably the experience of watching this gigantic shift at times was more interesting than the movie itself, but still it was quite entertaining. It had a great finale with the clock tower scene, which had some great animation, and yeah, it's not top tier Disney, but it's quite enjoyable.
Thank you. Kayla.
So I don't actually have a memory of this movie as a child. Sorry, guys. But I enjoyed it. I feel like it kind of had some of the scary essences of Sherlock that I remember reading when I was a kid. Reading The Hounds of Baskerville and, you know, kind of being frightened as a kid, but not so much so that I couldn't go to bed at night. So I think it had a good mix between a Disney and a Sherlock.
Excellent. Thank you. Matt.
So as a kid, I was a big fan of the like mouse stories. We read all of them. We listened to the book on tapes. And I actually didn't remember this movie too well, but had I watched it as a kid, I'm sure I would have loved it because I liked the mice. Now I still like the mice, I guess. So
which mouse stories were you listening to?
Book on tape?
Brian Jocks?
Yes, the Brian Jocks stuff. And some of the others. I don't remember it right now.
Redwall? Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, it was good.
Matt likes mice.
I like the mice. So, Ratatouille is like,
that's all we got out of that. Matt likes mice.
He must have loved that stripper mouse.
I'll take a copy of this movie home with me.
And so it was that a whole generation of furries was born.
Oh, no!
I have a feeling that the VHS of that stripper mouse seems going to be a little worn by the time you get it back.
It's okay. It's on DVD now. It doesn't get worn out. So.
Yes, it does, actually.
How do you know that, Thomas?
I just don't have words.
Criminal Intent taught me that one.
Yeah, I bet.
So which episode did he wear out watching?
Okay. So Matt, other Quinn. Wait, other Matt.
Although I've complained about some of the animation being cheap looking, I think it's worth seeing once. If you've got a kid who wants to watch a Sherlock stuff, we don't think it's appropriate for them, you haven't watched The Great Mouse Detective, that might work for them. And I like the whole falling battle on Big Ben. It's basically Reichenbach Falls from the original stories in this movie. And that's actually pretty clever. So I would say is see this movie once.
Just the one time.
How dare you?
Yeah, it's okay. It's not really that great.
Thank you. And Abby, final thoughts.
Ratigan. Oh, Ratigan. I thought this movie held up. I thought it held up even better than I remembered because it had more of the stereotypes of Sherlock that I wanted, minus the cocaine because it's a Disney movie. It had enough allusions to the actual Sherlock story. It was light enough that you could let your kid watch it and still be entertained. There was the seedy underbelly that lived up to my memories of the seedy underbelly. I still want that animatronic tulip belly robot from her dad. It's exactly like Wrath of Khan, where I thought that her dad would be around for more than 30 seconds in the beginning of the movie. But it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I would watch it again. And like my boyfriend, I like the mice, I guess.
Thank you.
Not going to ask.
See, I'm really trying desperately to put my thoughts together. I really like this movie. I think it didn't know what it wanted to be. It's a musical with only three songs in it that are musical songs. So you get some Disney notes in here that are clearly like upper level Disney notes. And so you can get this feeling that it's really dark age Disney. It comes out in a way that, well, let's back up. I love the fact that this is not a princess movie.
Mm-hmm. Woo!
Well, no, it's just not like, while Pixar is successful because it's coming up with relatively unique stories. I said relatively. It's not unique stories. It's Disney is finally stopped deciding to be either Grimm's Fairy Tales or Hans Christian Andersen. And this is them taking a different property and making them more whole, which is okay. It just feels like it's not a complete thought. Inherently makes it weird because they have to make it less classic feeling, which doesn't always work for Disney. But this does not feel terribly aged. I think in a time when Sherlock Holmes has come back, it feels very appropriate and it fits in very well. In a time when Disney's hurting, this is the last thing they did before Eisner took back over. And it works. The only shame is because when Eisner took over, he puts all this shit in the vault. This disappeared.
Yep.
And if you didn't own this on VHS, it never came out on DVD.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So this is one of these things that of our generation we saw, and if you weren't part of this generation, you didn't see it. That's the biggest shame.
I grew up on Aladdin and Little Mermaid, so I guess it makes sense that Watson was just cuddly enough to make it my kid's Sherlock movie.
Well, anyway, I think that's just something we should keep in mind, that this is one of the unique movies we've done, which Disney did not come out with a sequel, even though it's lined up to make a sequel. It's the only one that ends with a, you're not going to believe this, right?
That's
But we don't get any of that, which is incredible. And after this, the studio essentially reboots itself. But for a complete movie, it gets shoved away because when Eisner comes in, they want to make a new studio. Mm-hmm. And that's the shame of this movie. However, we are out of time, guys. So tune in next week and check out our website and follow everyone's website, which is on the Contact Us page, because we need validation individually. And if that little hit counter doesn't go up, I get a little sad. But remember, next week you can tune in again when we put a little bit more of your past on trial. Thanks very much. See you next time.
From the brain that brought you the Big Ben caper, the head that made headlines in it.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is brought to you by DudeLetter.com and is part of the ESO Network. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Ann Burns, and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by the Serenaders. Purchase their music through the Amazon link on DudeLetter.com or on MyopiaPodcast.com/Amazon. Want to help us out? Go to MyopiaPodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia gets a piece of the act. Questions or comments? Please visit MyopiaPodcast.com or contact us through MyopiaPodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, @MyopiaPodcast, and @DudeLetter. And find us on Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. It helps us out. We are also brought to you by Netflix, for seeing open the Disney vault now and again, and the Vincent Price School of Villains. Your introductory class of villain songs is free if you can laugh really, really evil. Tune in next week, and we'll put another little piece of your past on trial.
Has interfered with my plans. I haven't had a moment's peace of mind. Oh.
ESO Network production.
Goodbye so soon.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis and
Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.